You're listening to Your Music, Your Business, a podcast helping you to explore the business behind your music.
Hello, listeners. Today, I'm joined by award-winning producer Anna Laverty, who has a lengthy career and currently spearheads the Music Producer and Engineers Guild of Australia, or MPEG for short. I briefly want to take this moment to explain that we will be introducing the integration of pronoun introductions to the podcast in this episode. Simply put, pronouns should not be assumed. So with this in mind, Anna's pronouns are she, her. Thanks so much for joining the podcast today, Anna.
Thanks, Jazz.
It's great to have you here. So last year, alongside Foundation directors Kath Haraday and Tom Larkin, you established MPEG, which now boasts over 300 members who have worked with some of the most successful artists. Firstly, a huge congrats to you. What has been the most surprising highlight to date?
Thank you. We call it MPEG, by the way, because we're reclaiming the format MPEG as our that's our acronym. So what was the question? What's the most surprising thing?
Yeah, surprising highlight today.
Oh, surprising highlight. Honestly, just that we actually managed to get it off the ground, because it's easy enough to say that you want to form a group of people and do a thing, but to actually do it properly. And, you know, I had to Google what a constitution was, you know, like that's how green I was about this. But the need was so great. We really, really needed this organization that I kind of just had to punch through all those things and get it off the ground. So the fact that we're here now with members and doing things to help our members is probably the most surprising thing to me.
That's sort of a bit of a pinch me moment then?
Oh, just a bit of a like, you know, good for us for actually all volunteering our time and getting it done.
Yeah. No small feat, 100%.
Now,
MPEG, right?
MPEG, yeah.
Yeah, we're going to get it right this time then. Now, the MPEG conducted their inaugural survey report, shedding light on critical insights within the music production and engineering industry. And I'd love to unpack some of those insights with you. An alarming 3.1% of... Oh, sorry, it's 31.1% of respondents reported being underemployed, while 13% revealed that they work more than 60 hours per week. This is quite an eye-opening statistic for those within the music ecosystem who are quite literally the foundations of new music. What does this statistic in particular show MPEG about the music industry?
It's a really funny statistic. It sort of shows that some people are working nonstop and they are working, you know, more than sort of the recommended hours, which to be honest was probably how things used to be. But the underemployed thing is a real worry, and it is reflective of wider society. Like, so many people are underemployed at the moment in general, but for us in our industry, I guess it means that like there's a lot of work being spread pretty thin between a lot of people, and it's not enough work for people to do it as their only job. So a lot of people are doing production and then, you know, so recording music or whatever. And then on the side, they are, you know, doing loads of other things. So whether that be like audiovisual work or like podcast work or audiobook work, you know, whatever it may be, they're not, they don't have enough work in recording music for that to be their like sole job. And the money and you know, just going to another statistic of the report as well that goes to show the money that people make from music production or engineering is it's making them live below the poverty line on that income, which is, that's the worry. So they're having to supplement their income with other work, whether it be music related or non-music related, to be able to survive.
Yeah, which honestly, that blows my mind when you think of the fact that they literally are the very first step in the, like, in a successful release. Yes. And the fact that they, like, they are the start of the imbalance of not being paid enough to have a sustainable career. It's sort of, I think it's a part of the industry that we're maybe not shedding enough light on.
I think it's like, apart from, you know, it's like society, apart from a very small portion of people who are making a load of money, the rest of the ecosystem is really suffering and is really underpaid, as you say. And it's not that the people don't have, they're not working the hours. The people are working the full-time hours. They're just not getting enough money for the work that they're putting in. And so it's like endemic in our industry that people are, because they work with such passion because they love it, and so they do all these things for free or for cheap or whatever it may be. But at the end of the day, we all have to eat, and you know, there's also an issue of, like, as you get older and you have more responsibilities, you do need more money. So you need to be able to feed your children or pay your rent or whatever it may be. And that's when we lose people in the industry.
Yeah, definitely. And I think
so we're all so highly qualified. Like, almost all the people who go into production and stuff now have a degree, you know, and yet they still aren't making enough money to live above the poverty line, which is so upsetting.
Oh, beyond upsetting. And I think it's like, it's very eye-opening to how some of the ripple effects across the ecosystem have had on, you know, the sort of this same demographic or same job type that we're discussing right now. But then we see that with musicians, and we see that with artist managers, and you know, across the ecosystem, there's a lot of tension at the moment about money distribution and the value of our time and the lack of resourcing, basically, which is definitely something that we've had a conversation about in this podcast. And, you know, realistically, a lot of that flow on effect comes from the distribution of money and some of the, still the effects that we see that's of streaming and things like that, and how it just sort of ripples in and out of the industry and has a flow on effect on everyone.
It's all related. That's right. Like, you have to have a healthy, for everyone to sort of be doing well and survive, not just surviving, but like doing really well, everyone has to be getting paid. Because, you know, like, people are listening to music more now than they ever have in history. It's just that money that's generated isn't filtering down to the people who make the music, to the people who write the music. And, you know, it's kind of like this writer's strike in America. Like, there's a lot of talk about, why isn't the music industry joining this strike? You know, we're kind of going through the same issues. But we are quite fractured. So I guess, you know, this is my small way of organizing and, you know, getting music producers together to talk about what our issues are, and then maybe we can sort of try and change that in some small way in our country.
Starting the start of the conversation and making people actually acknowledge that they're not alone, or that there's a wider issue than they even thought of.
A lot of the feedback from members has been just like an email saying, hey, thanks so much for doing the report. Reading it was like quite hard, but I saw myself in these answers, and it made me feel like I'm not the only one that feels this way, and maybe I can talk about it with other people who are producers. And that honestly is like my greatest takeaway from it, is like the sense of community that people are feeling, even though we work alone and we're very isolated.
Definitely. Such a beautiful byproduct of trying to build a report that sort of shed light on everything and sort of created community and brought everyone together. Further to that too, I think that there was a point in the report that sort of touched on the fact that foundationally, and of course this would be so blindingly obvious if you are living on the poverty line, that producers and engineers aren't feeling properly remunerated, but also not properly credited for their work. Can you delve into how this was explored in the report?
Yeah, so the credits thing, that honestly for me, that was like one of my main issues why I wanted to start the Guild, because I had a couple of personal experiences where people sort of changed my credits, or they stuffed up my credits and they were like, oh, sorry. It really made me realize that, and you know, they obviously didn't know how much it would sort of upset me or hurt me, but it's really the value of credits has been so sort of beaten down over recent years. Like throughout history, people have worked for their credits. So, you know, obviously you get paid a fee or whatever, but the main thing that you were doing projects for was to get these credits so that you would get names under your belt and all that kind of stuff. And because of a lot of things, and one of them is online streaming, like platforms like Spotify do not have the appropriate credit categories. So it's a problem between the aggregators, the labels, the distribution, where they don't carry that data of those credits, and it doesn't translate to the listener. So I remember when I was growing up, if I listened to a record, and I was like, this is amazing, I would spend hours reading the liner notes and finding out who made the records, right? Who played on the records and all that kind of stuff. And all those things are gone now. And they're not gone, but we are sort of fighting to keep them, put it that way.
Yeah. And they're not in front of your face like they used to be.
Say that again.
They're not in front of your face like they used to be.
Yeah, that's right. And so we really have to hold on to that, because it's such an important part of being recognized for the work that we do, because if that gets lost in the data, in history, there will be no way of knowing who did that work.
Yeah.
And it's really important that we know which artists did which work. And so we need to really cling on to that. And that's something I fight for, because I think it's really important. And I have had meetings with Spotify and things like that, and I always bring it up, and they say it's a problem with the labels. And the labels say that information's in our data. So it's everyone blaming everyone else, but really we just need to sort it out. And so we need to advocate for that however we can.
Yeah, definitely. You could get me started on data storage for days, because I currently have a startup that's working on helping to solve that issue. So
okay, cool. Yeah, for
but
sure.
I feel this, and I completely agree with you. There is a lot of like pointing fingers saying, well, that data needs to sit with that person, and then the record labels being like, well, the data is there, we just don't have a place to actually place it. And distros are sort of just like, I don't know, we're just giving whatever the DSPs ask for. So
yeah,
it's definitely an uphill battle. And I think if it's not being pressured from the start, and it's also not being the culture of credits is not sustained across the industry, then it's going to get lost, because if there's not that pressure to put it in there, then artists are going to start forgetting, which they already are, to add it into like their distribution and things like that.
Yeah, that's right. And so I have to say that I think a lot of this stems from education. So people actually who work in the music industry, in these companies, not actually understanding what the difference is between a producer and an engineer and a mixer and a mastering engineer, right? So one of the things that we're working on at the moment is educating. Like, that's just a massive outreach to like try and explain to people that they are not the same role. They're very, very different jobs. And there's a hierarchy within our industry, and it's been in existence from the start. And although things like the term producer is kind of morphing all the time, which is wonderful, it still is a person who has a creative input on a record, you know, and so we need to, whereas an engineer is obviously a more technical role. Some people do both of those roles, but not always. And we have to explain to people that there is a difference and what the difference is.
Yeah, and continue to provide data points to have that information placed in, because otherwise we see these findings like you have found of producers and engineers feeling like they're not being credited, which doesn't help if you're living on the poverty line already.
Yeah, it's a kick in the teeth, because you do a lot of work for free, or you do a lot of extra work, like, because you're like, oh, I just, you know, I'll just do it for them, because they're my mates at that time when you're making the record. You're all pals and everything like that. And you assume that people will do the right thing. But the problem is people don't realize how important it is.
Mm.
They actually just don't realize. And so things that we assume people will do, they don't even know that they're supposed to be doing it.
Yeah.
Education.
Education. I love that. I'm glad that you guys are focusing on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I think another part of the report that I was really glad to see you focusing on and really honed in on was gender and race representation. It's definitely been a topic that is hot in the music industry at the moment, and I'm sure that's not why you put it in there. There's a lot of valid reasons to have this capturing this sort of data is very, very important. And it's definitely something that we've talked about in this podcast as well. The report for our listeners, the report found that 85.8% of respondents identified as male, which is a huge number. 11% are female and 1.9% are non-binary. And then what I also found really fascinating is that there was no specific identification of Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, with 2.8% opting as non-disclosed or indicated uncertainty. I've seen firsthand, as well as many other people in the industry, the impact that this sort of gender and racial representation has across the industry. But what does MPEG see as contributing factors to this?
Look, honestly, you'll probably think this is not the right thing for me to say, but I was quite shocked when I realized how many women there were, because for years, there's more than I thought that there was going to be, because for years I've been a music producer and I very, very rarely see other women producing music in studios. And so for me, what this shows is that there's a lot of women making music and they're not necessarily that visible. So when people come to me and say, but you're the only one, you have to come and talk on this panel because you're the only one. And I say, I'm not the only one. There are a lot of women out there making music. We just need to find them and show who they are. But at the same time, the only reason I think that is because there was a statistic that came out of America a few years back. I think it was about 8 years ago now. Where it was a very specific, statistic around top 50 in America kind of thing, and it was 2% of producers were women. And that was such a shocking statistic that there are organizations like 2% Rising that focus on getting more women into music production. And so that's why when it said like 11% or whatever it was, I was like, wow, that's gone up so much. Isn't that great? It's wild that we're still talking about that being good. I mean, really, really, it should be 50-50, right? With a
60-40
that for people to choose, you know, whichever gender bubble they want to sit in. But like I do so much work around women in music production or non-men in music production that I think we're on the right path. I think we're getting there, but we just need to keep it up. And the work can't all be done by the women. It just can't. It has to be done by people making space for women or non-binary people. And so that's what we'll continue to work on. the First Nations representation, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders, is shocking. Not even shocking, to be honest, because I knew that that was the case because I've done a lot of work in communities. I've worked with a lot of First Nations artists, and I often say I'm not the right person to be here. This should be a First Nations person recording this. Yeah. But there is a severe lack of First Nations, particularly engineers. There are people doing production, but engineers is really, really hard to find. And that has to be, it's going to have to be a long-term training situation.
Yeah.
Because obviously being a producer and engineer is, you're highly skilled, so you have like very specific skills that you need, and it's not something that everyone just has. So you do have to do training to get to that point, whether that be like formalized training in a college or as an assistant or an intern or whatever that may be. But that has to happen. And so we as an organization have been aware of this from before we even had a board. We're trying to influence the powers that be to help us with this issue in our industry, because how can we expect to capture stories of diverse voices and people if there is no one really there to capture it, literally capture it, as in record it? And so we, it's something that we're working on, and we've got a few ideas that we're working on to make it happen, but it needs to be First Nations led. And so it's hard, we're just sort of working on the best way to go about it at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I think it's such an important space to be in. And I think a lot of industry haven't quite grasped the, I think we understand the importance of that representation, but it's, what I think we haven't quite grasped is what is the difference between having that representation in the studio versus it not? And even just down to, and I must admit, I am speaking from a space of very little knowledge, experience or understanding, but I had a very interesting conversation with somebody recently about even just culturally how First Nations approach writing music, even just the business side of the music industry, it is so different than Western cultures. And we are almost asking all artists of First Nations, like Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander, to fit into our culture.
Yes, exactly. Into our box
and to conform. And that's just not good enough. And it doesn't foster that collaborative, space to truly build the music that they need to build.
The cool thing is, though, with that in mind, is that technology is really allowing people to do things in different ways. And so it doesn't have to be a case anymore of like bringing people into a really formalized recording studio in a big city to record. And so that really helps with capturing like more diverse voices and stuff, because you can take technology to people wherever they may be, and, do more field recording and stuff like that. And that is happening and that's amazing, but it is often sort of in terms of the First Nations music, white people going into community, whereas I think it should be, and it should be, generated from within community, and there should be resources there for that to happen.
Yeah.
But then at the same time, like, we have many very successful Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander sort of pop stars that come into big commercial studios and record. And again, it's not with First Nations engineers, and it should be.
Yeah.
So it's something we just need to, all to be aware of and mindful of, and bringing people up along the way, and women particularly as well, are doing the hard work at the moment to push their way into the space.
Yeah, definitely. And you say, I want us to touch on that, the way you just framed that then is push their way into the space. Do you feel like
there is? I feel like that's what I've always done.
Yeah. Do you feel like there really is that gender imbalance of like that? Do you really feel that 80% that was represented there, and that it feels like they're
It is there. It's absolutely there. But at the same time, it's not, the doors aren't closed. The doors are open. It's just that we have to, like, I've only ever had male mentors. I've only ever had, male sort of teachers or ever. There's no exception to that. I've only ever had that. And so I've been able to do it. But the representation is just absurd. Like I never had a female teacher in production or audio ever. I never had a female mentor. I never had, the only other women around were sort of the people who, studio managers, essentially. And that's a completely different role. So it just needs to change, but it massively is changing. I mentor so many women. I lecture in college. I do guest lectures in colleges just so that there's the three women in the class see me and say, cool. It's possible. I mean, it's possible anyway. You don't have to be on a gender, for it to happen, but the representation is important.
Yeah, definitely. And amazingly, and it's so great to see that there are so many programs out there now that are really starting to try and like specifically push production or like producing, I should say, in the music industry, and like pushing non-male identifying people to the forefront to give them that education and that community to really grow a successful career, which is lovely to see.
it's great for the people who want to be producers who aren't men, but it's also really, really great for the artists to have a choice of who they want in their space, because the feedback that I often get from female and non-binary artists that I work with, in fact, is that it's just such a different dynamic in the studio when it's, all women or whatever it may be. And so that's really nice for people to have that option.
And
for it not to be gatekeeped,
It's really important. Well, 100%. And I think when I mentioned my experience in this sort of, gender space in music production, I come from a space of being an artist manager and having an artist that has had those experiences in production rooms where, gone into a production space with a male identifying producer and come out and been like, that is not what I want. I do not want to go there. And it took her 6 months to really come out of that process and feel confident about going into another space, and found her space with a female identifying producer. And that was something that we're really, really holding on to. But I saw that the effect of that for her and what that had, the ripple effect on her career for. And it just goes to show that, sometimes, and obviously it can be very person dependent as well, but definitely can acknowledge that. But sometimes
it's a very common story, and it's depressing, to be honest, but it's not and it's and despite what people may think, it isn't all about sexual abuse or sexual harassment. It's about being mansplained to, and it's about people telling you what you want, and that is a person-to-person thing, of course, but historically, culturally, men can sometimes speak down to women and not listen to their opinions. And so taking that out of the equation and having women in the studio is a beautiful thing. And talking about what we were talking about before, the cultural stuff with First Nations people, often music is gender-based. So it's men's business and it's women's business. And so we need to have female music producers in that space also.
Yeah, 100%. And it is really great to see that organizations like yourself are really advocating for that push and actively working towards it, because it is so important. I think as we were talking through that too, I want to delve a little bit further into that education and really what that looks like. And you guys did a great job in your report reporting on that. And this was one statistic that actually I had thought had come a long way than what I had thought, expected it to. You found that 29.2% are possessing a bachelor's degree, and 38.8% are holding accredited or non-accredited education, indicating a move away from the traditional assistant/apprentice model. What do you feel has been the biggest shift here away from the traditional apprentice model? And is this the first quantitative data showing us that there is a value in these uni courses and expert-built programs and what it's had on the industry?
Oh, good question. I'm still trying to unpack what it means, but I think, you know, I can assume that because there are less large recording facilities, there have been for many years less opportunities for people to go and assist or intern. And so you're a 17-year-old kid, you're about to finish high school, or 18 depending on where you are, you're about to finish high school, you love music production, you want to get into music production. A lot of high schools these days actually have recording studios or music technology courses at school, and so they, you know, like, and this was certainly the case for me, because I finished when I was 17, and the thought of me going and working in a recording studio, like, straight out of school was, I wasn't even an adult yet. It was just unthinkable to me. And I think a lot of people think, I'll go to university or I'll go to a college and I'll specifically learn this thing that I want to do so that I have a greater chance of getting a job at the end of it. Unfortunately, there aren't many like jobs that you go and apply for and get. I mean, there are like, you know, in film and TV and radio and that kind of thing, to be a sound engineer, but to be like an independent music producer where you record albums and stuff, you're pretty much going to be freelance, you're going to be on your own. And so I think there are very few opportunities for you to go and intern with people. And also, like, being a, you know, a more experienced producer now, when I'm looking at an intern or an assistant, which, by the way, I'm always going to pay because I don't believe in unpaid labor, if you look at someone and they have a degree and they've spent 3 years learning at one of these colleges and they kind of know how to help you and they're going to be able to walk in on day one and help you, that's probably preferable over someone who's just come straight out of high school and they're actually a child, so then you have to have different insurances to look after them and all that kind of stuff. It's just easier to employ someone who's out of a college in my situation. So I don't know what it is. I mean, a lot of people aspire to go to university or college as well, so that has a lot to do with it culturally, you know.
Well,
but there's definitely merit in these courses. I mean, some are obviously better than others, but there are some amazing courses out there that will teach you everything that you need to know. And you have to be the right kind of person to be a producer or an engineer. It is a very specific type of person. And I think if you go to university, you're going to find out if you're that kind of person or not.
Exactly. So true. And I think even just in your response there, it's sort of, you highlighted so many ecosystem flow-on effects. Even just looking at, you know, the fact that culturally this has probably had a shift because there is such a huge push over the last multiple decades to push young people into universities. Because we're now told that's how you have a successful career that will get you that house, because you won't be able to do anything unless you have a degree. Or even if it's not university, it's a TAFE or something like that. It's almost it's almost like you have to have that answer, otherwise it's not acceptable. And then that flow-on effect then also becomes, as you said, like, they're now it now means that people are coming to you and you like, well, A, it creates an effect of now, because there's less big recording studios, there's now less internships, which also in turn affects how many people you get applications from and accept applications from. And I completely agree. Like I have interns within one of my businesses as well, and the difference between somebody coming to me straight out of high school versus somebody who has that degree, it's just such a different integration, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's such a ripple effect, and I think it's probably what
it
this
is.
Started.
And I think it's a cultural change as well, I have to say. Like I do think there has just been a big cultural shift in that. I have no doubt that it will swing back the other way. And my dream actually is to work with, you know, the Department for Jobs or whatever and create an intern system, because university and colleges aren't accessible for everybody. Talking about diversity and representation, intern, a paid internship program would just be almost like an apprenticeship in music production and sound engineering, is kind of like my dream and something, you know, if anybody listens to this and they're able to sort of come on board and get on a task force with me to try and make something like that happen, I please get in touch, because it's something I've spoken about quite a bit to a few people and everyone's really keen, but it's just doing the work. There's only so many hours in the day, and I'm spending a lot of it on the guild at the moment. So, and making records, obviously. Yeah. And raising children and, you know, the rest of
and
it.
And everything else, yeah. 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 There's definitely never one job title in the music industry, that's for sure.
No, that's right, yeah.
Well, hopefully there is that person listening, and if you do, please get in contact. I think, yeah, that you're completely right. There is a space for that, and it needs to happen, and will have such a diverse impact on the music industry with, like, internships like that, but then also internships like that across probably the whole industry because just the struggle to get up to any sort of career that is sustainable, that you can build a family on. It's hard. I love it. Just taking notes down, just got ideas. I want to quickly jump back to the conversation of remuneration for a second.
Yes.
I sort of want to touch on the discussion about over the last few years about a fee for service or a fee for time model, but also that some are also leaning towards a percentage of royalty fee remuneration model as well. How have you been seeing trends in this space at the moment with that?
So everyone's different and everyone structures their like, you know, invoicing differently, but I would always need a fee. I could never ever do anything just on royalties, because in Australia the market is not big enough. We just could not live off royalties unless you're making records that infiltrate overseas markets regularly. Which of our 300 members, I can tell you that is a very, very small percentage of people. So I always would charge a fee for, if it's like an album, it would be an album fee. If it's, you know, I just want to go in and record a few songs, it's a day fee. And then if I'm producing, if I'm having creative input on things, there's a producer points system, which is very, it's been around forever. Engineers don't really get producer points. You're not contributing creatively to the project. If you write some of the words or some of the chords or some of the melodies, then you get songwriting royalties. And that's what we talk about when we talk about splits. That's songwriting royalties. But if you're a producer or a mix engineer, because you're making creative decisions about the music, there is a royalty system that you're eligible for. And you just need to write it into your contracts.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So thank you for explaining that. I think it's like sometimes the industry doesn't necessarily understand all those splits because it's not talked about enough.
Education,
yep. Baby. I think we have this podcast. So on that further, so I think as you touched on, like just then as well, you're finding that from that royalty fee remuneration model, it's such a small percentage of people doing that realistically.
Yeah. I mean, I do both. So like every like album I work on, I get a fee for the project, but then also I get my royalties. So I get my production royalties. And I also, like, if I'm working with an artist and they're struggling on a chorus, and I say, do you want some help with songwriting? And they say yes, and we sit down and write some words and we change some chords and things like that. At the end of the session, we'll say, oh, what do you think about splits? And they'll say, oh, are you happy with 10%, 20%, 50%, whatever it is? And that's your APRA AMCOS royalties. So that's when you register the songs with APRA AMCOS. That's where that happens. The production royalty or the mixing royalty is just across any song that you work on because you're contributing to the production of that song.
Yeah. Right. Thanks for explaining that. I think it's very, very interesting to hear the different ways that people are working with their splits at the moment and what sort of conversations that does trigger. I personally love to delve in on that and probably have a whole other episode on like delving into splits and how fair that actually does look like, because as we're seeing in this report, the remuneration flow on effect of different split choices is not necessarily making it completely equal, or it feels right at the end, but then maybe of the session, but then maybe on release it's not being honored, and really looking hard into that. But because we don't have forever, I'm going to shift us. shift us from this amazing report that has really done some great eye-opening work and huge kudos to you to actually building a report in the music industry that has quantitative data that shows what the hell is going on, because it's not enough in the music industry. Definitely want to acknowledge that, but also acknowledge the fact that MPEG is not just a survey. Are you hoping to achieve over the next year with the over 300 talented producers and engineers within your community?
Thank you. This would be a really good point to just shout out to Magoo, who so Lachlan Gould is actually the producer. He's also he's a member of the guild, but he sort of came to me and said, hey, if you ever wanted to do research, I'd be up for it. And I was like, well, we want to do a survey, is that something you'd be interested in? And he's the one who he's an academic as well, so he's the one who helped us to read the data and to put the questions together. So he volunteered his time for that, and he's been amazing. So shout out to him, and then also the other members of the board who helped to pull it all together as well. So coming up, oh my gosh, we have so much coming up. So we do, like I said, education's important. So we've got these one sheets, which is like, what is a producer, what is an engineer, blah blah blah. They're all going to go out shortly. We have two in-person events coming up. So there's one in Melbourne, one in Sydney, just to help again build that community. People can meet each other face to face so that we're not just all isolated weirdos working in our studios at home. There's a lot of chat around an awards night, which is something we're working on, but we just need to ensure that we can can do it financially. But it's very important that we do start awarding our incredibly talented producers and engineers in this country and giving them some kudos from within the community, and letting people know that they are appreciated. And that's something that came out of the report, was people just feeling extremely underappreciated. And we liaised with ARIA about their awards, and this year they have a producer award and an engineer award, which was our recommendation. But we would love for them to have more awards, like mastering engineer, but they just don't have the capacity to do that. So we're going to pick up the slack on that and have our own award system and award lots of people for the amazing work that they're doing. And not in a competitive way either. It'll be very much in a, you did a great job this year, here, have a trophy from your peers. So that's heaps for us to be going on. We're going to have our AGM as well shortly, which will be our second one. We're a year old now, so, you know, we'll just keep on keeping on with our monthly control room online catch-ups, and keep chipping away at advocacy and building community.
Yeah, definitely. Oh, I love the sound of all of that, and particularly that award ceremony. That's definitely something that's so important, and that acknowledgement is fantastic for the people that are experiencing it, but then also really great for the rest of the industry to see who's really making waves, but then also where they can actually also personally be striving for.
Exactly.
And I think, like, to speak to that from a personal perspective as well, the Australian Artists Managers Association has just started their own awards. I think they're in their second year or something. And I think on that first year, I was like, oh, there's something I can be working towards. Great.
Yes. I'm so glad to hear you say that, because the AAM has actually been a real inspiration to me.
Oh, you dropped out. Can you hear me, Anna? Well, you sort of moved then. Can you hear me?
Hello?
Okay, you're back now.
I'm back. So what I was saying was the AAM has been a real inspiration to me, because last year at Big Sound, I went along to the AAM meeting with my manager, Kath Harity, and I felt really out of sorts because I'm not a manager. But when I got there, I was so inspired by everyone that was there being really invested in the issues that are important to managers. And it was big name managers who, artist managers, like people who are managing themselves. And everyone knew about the things that everyone was talking about. And there was so much respect amongst the people there. And I just thought, wow, imagine if we had something like this for producers. And that was when I had just started the Guild, and I thought, oh, this would be such an amazing thing. And then they started their awards, and I was like, and that's going really well for them as well. So they've given me some advice just on running an organization like this. They're amazing.
That sounds like something they would do too, just like finding, like, you really trying to build communities across the music ecosystem to really build everyone up, because it is really blindingly obvious now that that's the way it's going, how we're all going to benefit is if we build everyone up.
That's right. Yeah. And stand up for ourselves as well, against sort of big industry that tries to infiltrate music and monetize it and not look after the people who are making the music. And so if we stick together and we have boundaries and we don't let people cross them, then that's how the music industry survives and thrives, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Oh my gosh, we could delve into that for multiple episodes in that one.
Yeah.
But my last question for our episode today, I want to take us out of, you know, all the like amazing work that you're trying to do with MPEG and all of this amazing work that this data has shown, and really just quickly, as like on this last question, focus in on you. I ask this question of absolutely everyone who comes on the podcast, and that is, when you're 19 years old in a retirement home and brag to your room member about what you did during your long life, what would you like to say to them?
I hope I'm not in a retirement home. That's what I'll say. I just hope I did the right thing by everybody. And I'll say that I just tried to do music for my whole life, which I believe is so important to our communities and our society, and helps people express themselves. I just hope I was able to help.
What a lovely thing to be able to say at the end of your life, hey.
I was able to help people. Yeah. And I do that through music, which is the only thing in my life that has ever spoken to me in the way that it does. Yeah.
So special. I'm so happy that, thank you for sharing that. It's really, really glad to see all the amazing work that you're doing, and the amazing work that MPEG is already doing and about to start doing, and can't wait to see these awards when it gets off the ground.
Oh, me too. There's a lot of work between now and then.
A lot of work, yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining the podcast today, Anna. It was lovely to have you.
Thanks so much for having me.